I'm Jeannie Allen, and this is Reality Check.
Reality Check with Jeannie Allen is produced by National Review and is one of more than a dozen podcasts offered on the National Review online website. If you'd like a free subscription to the podcast so that you never miss a program, simply sign up at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. And now, here's Jeannie Allen.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. I'm Jeannie Allen. Our guest today has been a leading pioneer in education and media for the past four decades. He has served as chairman of Esquire magazine and founded Whittle Communications and the Edison Schools. Chris Whittle is currently the chairman and CEO of Whittle Schools and Studios, a global network of independent pre-K to 12 schools serving children from 3 to 18. As I think Chris will share with us, he is seeking to help reimagine education, believing education is stuck in the past. Boy, is it stuck in the past, Chris. And that a dramatic modernization is long overdue. I am so excited, Chris, to have you on. Thank you so much for joining me.
Always good to be with you, Jeannie. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, you've been jetting around the world with this new, this is going to be the first global school network challenging traditional school, creating more connected world. And I'd love you to just start by sharing a little bit about how this came about. I mean, you're opening two campuses, is that right, in 2019, Washington and Shenzhen, China. Gosh, why, how, what should we know?
First, as is often the case, work is iterative, and you and I and many in the reform movement have been working on new models for schools for decades, and this is really, I think of it as my third trip up the mountain. Edison Schools really pioneered the charter school movement. Avenues, the World School in New York, was one of the most successful private school launches in the United States. And then this really builds on the experiences from both those. And it's about two things. It's about, we like to think of it as creating the first truly modern school, and as part of that also creating the first global one.
You know, as a board member, thank you for all these years of the Center for Education Reform. We love innovation and opportunity. And as far as those two words go, innovation, opportunity, this meets the bill on both cases. And so you've talked about different things like how space influences education. In some of the writings you've put out in your blogs on the website for Whittle School and Studios, you talk about project-based learning, online learning, but not just as sort of these disconnected ideas. You've discovered that individualized education is really what we should be pursuing. How are you guys approaching that?
We start with the view that advising and very advanced advising is the spine of the school, and that only through good advising systems can you actually know children one-on-one, and only through good advising systems can you actually direct and support them in personalized learning. And so we're investing a lot of time, energy, and money into the creation of what we think is going to be the world's best advising system. And it is a school dedicating significant percentage of its time to one-on-one scheduled time with faculty members and students, and on a frequent basis, so that rather than just having advising systems that are on a card or a label, these are actually actualized.
And it's school and studio. Why? What's the difference?
School is what you would think of as the 8-to-3 part of the school. Studios is everything outside of those hours, and it's afternoons, evenings, weekends, summers. And our view is that all those things that are a la carte, if you will, and that parents are having to assemble in large part on their own, everything from which summer camp this year to which coding camp, to which tutoring program, to which martial arts activity. We're putting all of that under one roof and essentially saying to our parents and our students, integrate those things into your core program, and we're helping them integrate them into their core program.
Okay, that's a parent's dream, right, and a student's, as opposed to having so many disconnected, different places to go and not really feeling like all of those quote-unquote external things are actually part of learning. Is this a new pathway, you think?
It's a big part of how we actually think we will realize personalization, because one of the things that happens in school design is the, quote, requirements wind up taking all the time, and the personalized efforts get pushed aside. And by integrating all of that other time into the real school experience, we think we can make a big step forward in personalization. So an advisor can say, all right, let's think about what your summer camp or summer program is going to be. How does that fit in with what you're really excited about? Have you looked at these options? And some of those will be options we can bring, and some will just be options that we can direct them to. So we don't have to be the only provider, but we'll be one of the providers.
You know, a lot of folks are talking about personalization today. I've had folks on the program who are really dedicated to the notion that we must do things differently. We've got to turn the clock ahead. How do you define that? What's the difference between saying we have a personalized school or personalization and what most kids are going to today?
Well, it starts with the allocation of time, Jeannie. And if you do not dedicate a part of your schedule to personalization, then you're not doing personalization. And so we have designed a calendar which puts that front and center as opposed to putting it as an afterthought. And I'll give you an example, just one example. One day a week we call X Day, which is just Expedition Day. And it's where there are no classes in the school, and it's all about getting out into the cities that our campuses are in and using the city as campus in many respects. And that also allows for using that time for children and students personalizing their own educational program. And so step one is good advising. Step two is you better dedicate time to it or everything's going to get sucked up by the required program.
And obviously this is the beauty of having this enterprise be private, because you can do that. And so many educators who would love to have a day like that are confined by the rules and regulations, which say there has to be all sorts of hoops to jump through for a field trip. Are you hoping that this will kind of take off or be once again a model for other people? I mean, it's just, I think a lot of folks don't realize how incredibly difficult that would be in any other circumstance.
Well, and it's hard even in a private setting, because to give you an example, in a lot of countries, private schools are regulated to a significant degree by the public education authorities. That's not true in the U.S. But if you look at China, private schools actually are licensed by and report into the public school systems within the districts that they're in. And so even though private does give you generally a greater measure of freedom, it doesn't completely escape the difficulties you're talking about.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And then it does come down not just to the different environments, but people And you, you guys have assembled an incredible leadership team, both domestically and globally. I suspect they're helping advise on all of this stuff. How was it intentional, obviously? And can you tell us what you were thinking? I mean, some of the people that are coming to work with you.
We are blessed with a great team, and over my career, I've had the great pleasure of being able to assemble really three or four great teams in different endeavors over my 50 years of entrepreneuring. At the head of our educational endeavor is this gentleman named Nick Dirks. He was head of Berkeley for the last 5 years, and before that was head of the faculty at Columbia, and then he's joined by a whole series of heads of schools. Rebecca Upham came from BBN, the leading private school in Boston. Jim Hawkins came from Harrow, the great boarding school in London, and so we have a terrific group, and of both what I would call designers, but also practitioners.
Right, right. And that's, again, a really unique aspect of what you're doing, because most schools are, again, not confined, but they have wonderful educators or people attempting to deliver programming, but most of it was created outside of where they are. And they rarely have the flexibility to cater and to tailor to the students. I'm wondering if you think that's our biggest issue or what. I mean, just today there was, once again, one of those annual Gallup polls that tells us what people think about education. And you and I know that those are, you know, they're interesting. They're not necessarily that meaningful. But it always strikes me as interesting that, you know, over 70% of people say they're incredibly satisfied with their own schools, and, you know, always under 50% say they're satisfied with schools in general. And year after year, we're looking at the same issues. Is it because we're just not structuring schools the right way, Chris? What do you think?
And you know this, parents want to feel good about the decisions they've made, and they've made decisions to either select particular schools, or they've moved to neighborhoods or cities on the basis of schools. And so just as you like to feel good about the car you bought, you like to feel good about the school you bought, and that's one of the reasons that you see those kind of polls. One of the biggest barriers is parents see schools through the prism of the schools they went to. And I have a saying, we all went to the same school because schools are relentlessly alike worldwide. And, you know, I spend about half my time in China for the last few years, and if you look at schools there and you look at schools in the United States and you look at schools in the United Kingdom, they are very similar. And breaking away from those patterns is very, very difficult. And I have this saying that it takes a tremendous amount of launch velocity to just kind of get through the gravity field of what we all think education is and should be. And you know me well enough to know this is something I've been working on for a very long time, and it's not easy. And we're pretty optimistic that we've got the ingredients right this time.
Well, it certainly seems like it. Let me ask you about another aspect of gravity fields out there. And I know it's not the core part of your business, but it's certainly influencing and influenced by. And that's higher ed. You know, I'm struck by the fact that some of the same conversations that we were having 25 years ago about changing K-12 are now happening, finally, to higher ed. And yet, at the same time, because of the advent of technology and maybe other things I'd love to hear your thoughts about, people are being questioning, like, is it worth it? Is college worth it? And then you hear people pushing back and saying, well, we need plumbers and we need welders. And I get a little frustrated because it suggests that we don't think that everybody needs a great education. What do you think is going on with higher ed? Is that a challenge as well? And could that stand a little bit of reboot or launch velocity to get through?
I'm not a pro on the category. I mean, it's something to have an informed opinion. You've got to spend the time and right. energy on it. I see what I think a lot of people see, which is one thing I find interesting is that students that have gone to really good high schools, I think often experience disappointment at the university level because they've done so much at a high school level that it can feel redundant to some degree. And then students that haven't gone to really good high schools, it in some ways is remedial work at the college level. The other thing that speaks to colleges being both vulnerable and in the sense of being disrupted, but also opportunities for disruption, is that you're dealing with young adults in colleges and universities, and you don't have the kind of in loco parentis responsibilities that you have in K-12. And so what they can do, I think, is the opportunities are immense and different in higher ed.
To diversify and everything. Yeah, I actually remember at one point in time, and I have quoted you hundreds of times, literally, on this, and I don't remember what the context was, but you said, and maybe you'll remember, you said the difference between, you said, what's the difference between high school and college?
90 days.
Yeah.
And just to add to that, high school senior would typically have 30 hours of required class a year, and 90 days later, a college freshman has about 11 hours. And what it shows is a college assumes a level of independence on the student's part, and a high school does not. And yet, there's very little difference between a high school senior and a college freshman. And it shows that high schools have the chance to do a lot more than they think they can do with their students.
And we're all kind of snookered into thinking it's okay. I mean, as most college students now, maybe freshmen are beginning, and like us at one time, the parents drop them off, and you're so excited, and it's this moment for independence. You think, what happened differently in those 90 days to all of a sudden make them able to do all these things on their own? I think it's probably why they're having less and less success overall, as you've suggested. Another really interesting thing, and listeners on this show in particular, Chris, are entrepreneurial, they're forward-thinking, they're usually market-based people. And so I want to share, or have you share with our listeners, some of the background of the business that you created. When I had the good fortune of being in Beijing and listening to you talk about the new modern school, you mentioned that the new modern school would not be for-profit, it was by-profit. And I remember thinking, what a brilliant term, that you can actually use money in different ways and not have this kind of tinge of something being for as opposed to by. I'm probably not describing why very well, but tell us a little bit about what is by-profit.
I think the enemies, if you will, of for-profit activity perfectly named it. They went, let's call it for-profit, as if that is the only reason for being. And that literally by labeling a school that, you're going, the objective here is that. Actually, capital is just a tool, and it is a means to an end. There are various ways to raise it. You can raise it philanthropically. That's one way. You can raise it via shareholders where they get returns. That's another way.
Mm-hmm.
But you're raising it in order to achieve whatever your larger objective is. And in our case, it's to build a modern school. And I'm frankly agnostic about which way we did it. I think it would have been impossible to do what we are doing philanthropically. And we've raised, in 3.5 years, over $700 million. And I don't think we could have raised that in a philanthropic setting.
That's a great point. And the nation's leading organizations, industries, efforts have been built on capital. And I think that's an enormous lesson for us all and something that education doesn't typically take kindly to. And hopefully that's shifting. So I started at the top of our conversation, Chris Whittle, and I mentioned that you were at Esquire early in your career. In fact, you were a media executive. What do you see as the difference today between media and then and now?
that I'm a lot older. It's a totally different world, and one that to really understand it, I think you have to be in it in a big way. Where I see it most is if media in China, the social media there just completely rules the roost in terms of how media functions versus here. And here we still have the kind of remnants of old media alongside social media. There, it's hugely socially driven. So, and it takes a whole different group of people and a different generation to really understand how it functions, and new organizations have to make sure that they include teams that really understand those new vehicles.
You must get a chuckle when you think about, you know, as the founder of Channel One, when there was all sorts of controversy, you know, 30 years ago about putting any news in a classroom, which was the premise, and now we can't even peel your basic media technology out of a student's hands. It's all over. Does that just make you laugh, or do you just think, wow, I was so ahead of the game?
It was a different time and place, and it's amazing to see what has happened in that short period of time. And I wish that when we created Channel One, which was really the first national news system for students, I wish we had had the kind of technology that we had today. It was a very different era.
Well, you've certainly been an incredible entrepreneur. I'm super excited to be watching and learning every day about what's happening at Whittle School and Studios. For those of you who want to learn more, there's definitely a website. We'll give that to you in a minute. It will be linked to our website. But, Chris, I just want to take a final minute and preview for folks the fact that we're going to get the benefit of your wisdom and knowledge at the CER Silver Summit on October 26th this year in Miami. You want to give us any insights about what you're going to talk about and whet people's appetite?
I'm going to talk a good bit about what's happening in Asia in education and how I think we can learn from that in the West. And I'm there every month. It's by far the most active educational scene in the world, and there is a great deal that we can both export to Asia, but also import from Asia. And I think thinking of education in export and import ways is something that we would be good to do, because it's one of America's great exports.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm fascinated and grateful that you encouraged me to look there. And one of the things that I think that the more and more people will take a look at Asia and realize how much they were doing, it might actually generate some more activity here, because we're certainly not keeping up on some things, and other things we're doing better. So I can't thank you enough for being with me, Chris. My guest on Reality Check has been Chris Whittle, Chairman and CEO of Whittle School and Studios. For more information, you can go to our website, edreform.com, where we will link to Whittle School and Studios, as well as follow Chris and his work at Whittle School and Studios on Twitter. Thank you again, Chris, for joining me. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Jamie.
Reality Check is a weekly podcast produced by National Review and posted on Monday at nationalreview.com. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free and make sure you don't miss any future programs. You can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And you can also find much more about education reform, opportunity, and innovation at the Center for Education Reform's website, edreform.com. Don't forget, tune in to Reality Check every week.